Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 369. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome back to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. Welcome back if this is not your first time here. Welcome if this is your first time here. Don't forget to subscribe in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, I have a great guest. My goal here really is to show you that no matter what you go through, becoming a physician is still something that you can accomplish. And today, my guest, Kevin, had to go through a bunch, including a lot of issues with his family and finances and starting new in a new state at a new school and really a new path. And we'll find out all about Kevin's journey right now. When did you realize that you wanted to be a physician?
Ooh, I got asked that many questions. Asked that a lot of times during my interviews. I think it first started. So in high school, I was involved a lot in wrestling, and I wrestled for many years prior to, and I would have to go through these episodes of weight cutting and whatnot, where I'd have to start the week on for example, my senior year, I would wrestle at 1:30, but I would start the week at 1:50. So definitely not healthy, but I have to cut 20 pounds in three, four days.
You wear some trash bags in the car with the heat on?
Yeah, exactly. Trash bag, car, sauna after practice. Mm-hmm. It was wild. And I don't know. I definitely wasn't safe, but I kind of got an interest in exercise physiology for my many years of wrestling. And that carried over to college, where I started competitive bodybuilding. And now it was definitely, it's a different sport, but similar as far as have to do a lot of exercise. You have to have self-discipline and whatnot, and then also maintaining your diet. So I've always had this interest in exercise physiology, exercise science. But going into college, I knew that I wanted to apply that through a health field. So I started volunteering at a physical therapy clinic, and it was really gratifying to see patients come in post-surgery, post-accident, and then 6 months later, be able to see them independent, walking again or doing whatever they did prior to that surgery or accident. And I really was fortunate to be involved with their rehab process.
How early on in your college career was this? Was this freshman year, sophomore year? How early was this?
Well, actually, I had an internship, physical therapy internship, my senior year of high school.
Okay.
So I would go to class, for the first in senior year of high school, I would go and volunteer at a physical therapy clinic for the first 3 hours. And then the last 3 hours of high school, I would go to my classes, and it was like a really cool experience. I got to learn a lot about, rehabilitative exercise, got to follow patients around, teaching them about exercise and the proper form and whatnot. And it was really cool because I got to, carry my passion into like a career. And I so I came into college thinking I want to do physical therapy, but mm-hmm. the more I was involved in physical therapy clinics, the more I've seen patients come in with a lot more conditions that physical therapy not necessarily be able to help with, as far as like from a well-being standpoint. Like I've seen patients come in like with dietary, like severe dietary needs, like obesity, high blood pressure, but also like patients coming in with like depression or some type of psychological condition that not necessarily physical therapy can treat. So from that moment on, I realized that I wanted to be someone that can help someone in a more holistic sense, treating their wellness rather than just their physical health.
Yeah. And that's super similar to my story, where I was playing baseball. I got her playing baseball, went to a physical therapist. I said, oh, this is cool. I want to be a physical therapist. And then ultimately decided on orthopedics after dissecting that that cat, my senior year biology class. So,
oh, wow.
So for you, you're sitting there in your physical therapy clinic doing this internship, kind of getting more exposure, starting college, wanting to be a physical therapist, getting more exposure, and seeing that physical therapists can't do it all, right? They are seeing patients that have more complex issues and not just joint pain and post-op kind of joint replacement rehab, that kind of stuff. And you're like, well, maybe I want to do more, right? That's what it sounds like.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm very grateful for my experience in physical therapy clinics because I was exposed to a lot of things. I met a lot of great physical therapists that I learned a lot from. But yeah, there's like something in me that's like just telling me like that, wow, I want to do more.
Yeah. And so for you, what was that first step in trying to figure out what that more is? Because there's still a lot more on the table other than becoming a physician that potentially could fulfill that wanting more.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So I think it first started when I was at my first social justice trip. If you're familiar with UC San Diego, I was working with their medical students in the Border Health Project. And basically it's this nonprofit that goes out and helps with migrant farmers and giving them free healthcare and free education and whatnot. And a lot of these migrant farmers are Latino, so there's a language barrier, but we had translators and whatnot. And when we went to go out and give them a free clinic, giving them like education, resources in order to improve their health, I realized that a lot of populations, not just migrant farmers, but a lot of populations, especially minority or at-risk populations, don't have that, I realized that some groups in America, especially, are more prone to disease and whatnot due to various circumstances not in their control, especially me coming with my background. My family were refugees from the Vietnam War. And when they came in as well, they had a lot of health conditions due to just circumstances not in their control. And like a lot of these groups, like especially my parents or the minority groups that I worked with, are just out here trying to make a living and provide for their family. And when there is, when they are prone to certain diseases or conditions that are not in their control, I guess that's what clicked in my head. I was like, wow, there's a need for people to, or physicians to care for and provide like information or resources out there for these at-risk minority groups. Mm-hmm. From that moment on, I guess that sparked a fire in, my heart, that like I wanted to be someone that can be an advocate and be a voice for immigrants, minority groups, and whatnot that may receive variation in clinical care, even in like hospital settings, due to circumstances not in their control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit more, because I think your story potentially aligns with that a little bit, at least based on kind of a little bit of the story that you sent me. When you're doing this border health project, and you're seeing these families in need, at one point you and your family were in need. Talk a little bit about kind of the journey that you and your family went on and how that impacted your journey to medical school.
Yeah, of course. So it was the spring semester of my first year of college. It was actually finals week. And I was studying for finals, and I get a call from my parents saying, like, hey, my dad was on the phone. He's like, hey, my dad was like, we lost it. I was like, lost what? And he said, we lost like everything. We lost our homes, our cars. Basically, my parents had a bankruptcy, and we pretty much lost all we had. And after talking with the financial aid office at the school where I used to go in Michigan, where I started as a freshman, I learned that I wasn't able to attend there anymore due to inefficient funds. At that moment, I was pretty stressed. Like, it was finals week, and like, I was worrying about my grades, but also not only that, I was worrying about my future here. And I like had to make decisions, like quick decisions in the next couple of days of what I was going to do moving forward, not just from like an educational standpoint, but from like, where am I going to go like to live, or like, where's my next home going to be? So I had to make the decision that I would move to California, because I had extended family members in California, and I would go to community college there so I can, because community college is relatively cheaper than where I was going to. So I moved to California, and from there it was a barrier, because it kind of set me back. I wasn't going to graduate in 4 years anymore, like a lot of my friends were, like the projected usual time it takes to finish like your bachelor's. And then I also lost my network of professors and physicians that I built over in Michigan. I wasn't able to really do work or like research for them anymore, because of moving to California. I think the major barrier was having to, you know, come to California, reestablish myself, and build a new network. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, learn like the different, because going from Michigan to California, I went into a community college that was a quarter system. So having to get used to that as well, the fast pace of the quarter system rather than the semester system. That was a lot of things I had to learn how to adapt to change. Mm-hmm.
At any point during that journey, was there any discussion either with just yourself or with your parents about staying out of school and helping the family with finances or anything along those lines?
There definitely was. And what my parents wanted me to do, was just focus on school, because fortunately I got to move in with extended family that I didn't have to like pay room and board for, which was nice. So I could still focus on school, but still I worked two jobs during my time, pay for like my necessary funds for community college and pay for classes and whatnot. But my parents, despite not going to college, they really, wanted me to focus on school, because those were the opportunities they never got.
Yeah. What was it like to go through this process and have to move and lose your network, like you talked about? If not the discussion of staying home and working and helping your family with finances, was there any thought of like, well, I'm leaving school. I have to transfer. I have to do all this over. Maybe I can't do it. Did you have any voices either in your own head or from other people that your path to medical school, or you're probably, were you still pre-PT at that point?
Yeah, I was in the midst of like,
figuring it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So was there any doubt that you could even do that with all of this kind of upheaval in your life?
I don't think there was doubt. I think it was my most biggest concern was like the delay. And like, to be honest, I kind of felt embarrassed because I know that like there's a stigma, and I used to believe in it that like, you know, like community college students, are not receiving like a quality education as like university students, or like seeing my friends like graduate before me. I think those were like the biggest things, but they're more like psychological. And like in hindsight, like now that I've graduated and stuff, that doesn't even matter. But, you know, like attending to or trying to keep up with the cultural norms of people usually like graduating in 4 years and whatnot. And I think those were like the biggest barriers. I think with my years of wrestling, I was really fortunate for, because I wasn't a very good like academic student. Academically in high school, but I did wrestle throughout most of my high school experience, and I built a great deal of resiliency and self-discipline, and I dealt a lot with adversity on the mat, and from that I converted to how I approach, I guess, life. Because in wrestling, you're on the mat, you versus your opponent. Like when you're on the mat, it's just you. So you know, you have to defend for yourself and whatnot. Like no one's out there to help you in the sense. And so I had like a really great work ethic and like experiences dealing with adversity before.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I love sports, right? I wish everyone who can could play sports. I know I have a friend who has two kids, and like their family rule is you have to be doing, like you have to be involved in one sport and one like musical instrument at all times. That's just, they believe in how much that kind of shapes who you are as a person.
Most definitely. Yeah. Cause the amount of character and things that like you develop that can't be necessarily built in the classroom. Those are skills that you can take wherever you go.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's so crucial.
So once you transferred and you had to rebuild your network, talk about that. How did you rebuild your network? Because I think that's where a lot of students struggle, is building that network. And so you're a perfect example of having a network and then losing it all and then needing to rebuild it. How do you start with that?
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to, not a lot of people would move or were in, I guess, big cities like me when I moved to San Diego. So I guess being in San Diego was perfect for me, because despite being community college, like where I live, there is multiple universities around. There's San Diego State University, Point Loma, Nazareth University, San Diego University, UC San Diego. So there are a lot of various a lot of different academic institutions, and as well as a lot of hospitals. Like I can just think of like five hospitals off the bat in San Diego within like about, I don't know, a 10, 5 to 10 minutes drive away from each other. So there are a lot of opportunities to learn, but I guess being resourceful, I think I had to a lot better than most people, and realizing this, because like I didn't have a family friend that was a physician, or none of my family are physicians, or in healthcare for that matter. So like, I guess I just had that like realization in my head, like I need to like meet people, in order, like in the right field in order to progress. So, for example, when I was in community college, like I was also doing research at another university, and that led me to be able to like do a research or like talk at a research conference. And I was like volunteering at a a couple different hospitals, and I was like working with UC San Diego medical students. So I think, and I think location is a big thing, and like the resources, but knowing that I had to network and build a network in order to like explore medicine more kind of gave me that, I guess, that fire or that push that I needed to actually go and do that or be proactive about it.
Yeah. So talk about how you did that though. Were you reaching out through school? Were you sending emails, making phone calls? What did you do to actually do that?
It was like a combination of all three, like making phone calls to hospitals, emailing. It definitely is a number game, especially when you're trying to find physicians to shadow. Like I probably emailed like, I don't know, 15 to 20 physicians when you only get like one or two reply from a physician, or with phone calls. When I got my research position during community college, I actually went to this conference and it was like the science fair with it. And I just talked to a lot of the scientists, and I found a scientist that was doing research in muscle atrophy. So I was like, wow, that's like right up my ball. So I like just talked to him, and like, you know, putting yourself out there and going out to science fairs and conferences, because if you're in a major city, they are available. You just need to go there and like be ready to talk about like the research of interest or whatnot.
Yeah.
And then I'm just thinking like, oh, so I like there at my community college, there were a couple of clubs like AMSA and whatnot, where we had like connections with other organizations at major universities. And like through networking there, I was able to like further my network. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of like calling, emailing, organization work, going out, meeting people.
Yeah. What was the hardest part about that transition from one school, one university, back to community college, back to another university?
I think from my experience, at least, the difficulty as far as like academic rigor increased, because even though I went from university back to community college, I think the academic rigor at this community college in San Diego was a lot more was a lot greater than the university I had. And then going from that community college to a major university, the academic rigor was even more, and I had to tailor my learning style accordingly. Throughout my undergrad experience, my learning style and how I studied changed drastically. And that has to do to coming up with ways to be more efficient with my time, getting involved more. So being able to absorb information better or utilize resources better, whatnot. So through transferring to different schools and learning how to adapt my learning style accordingly to the academic rigor. And then of course, just meeting new professors and whatnot. And like, again, building that network. At least for me, it's always uncomfortable to go out and talk to, especially someone that's like big in their field or whatnot, or professor. But I think it definitely got easier as I did it more. Now I still get nervous when I like go up to someone that I don't know to talk to them. But it's like, that's a skill that I'm always going to have to use.
Yeah. Talk about the actual pre-med journey part of this. When it comes to taking the MCATs, to taking all of your pre-med courses and getting good grades, what was the biggest struggle for you there?
Oof. Okay. I think the biggest struggle for me was, it depended on the stage. So I think during community college, I wasn't involved as much. So I was just focused mostly on classwork. There's not opportunities. Of course, I did like my hospital volunteering or whatnot, and then my research, but it wasn't as big or as challenging as when I went to university, a major university after community college, and the academic rigor was greater, and along with the quarter system, definitely a lot of information I need to know in a short period of time, especially those classes where it's just like midterm and final. There's no assignments. And like literally your grade is riding on, like at least I think about 90% of my science classes were like that. Just like, cause a quarter is 10 weeks. So you have a midterm week 5 and then your finals week 10. And like without having any assignments or extra credit, like your grade is just based on like those two things. And that sucked because I don't know if you do bad on your week 5 midterm, then there's a lot of stake going into your final, but still the final is always worth more than the midterm. So it's like, you just have to do well in both. So that's a type of like class rigor that I had in university that I had to adapt with. And then as well as going into university, I had greater role in research, taking on a research position and rushing up a pre-med fraternity, like dealing with all like the extracurriculars. Of course, I joined things that I generally enjoyed, but I had to give up things. For example, during community college, I competitively bodybuild. And like at that point, as soon as I was able to acclimate with like my learning and whatnot, I was able to still fit in competing in bodybuilding competitions. But then as soon as I transferred to university, the time slot to learn due to the academic quarter and whatnot was smaller. So I definitely had to cut back on extracurriculars, which I regret. But I think the biggest thing for me as well, it was the MCAT. Like I struggled with the MCAT.
Welcome to the club.
Excuse me?
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, yes. I think one of my issues was, so I was in a pre-med fraternity and it was a great like community.
What fraternity was that?
Phi Delta Epsilon.
Awesome. Okay.
And like, it was a great community. I made a lot of great friends, there were so many people out there to help you. But at the same time, I think my biggest mistake was taking too much advice. In the sense that, like, because a lot of people have different learning styles and whatnot. So if you take someone's advice to heart, being like, you have to do this way in order to, like, do good, that was my big issue. For example, one of my friends was like, oh, you have to take the Princeton course. And so I took the Princeton course, which is a really expensive course. And I didn't do so well. What I learned was that I'm not a very good lecture learner, meaning that I don't do well when information is like fed to me. I'd rather like sit with it at my own pace and digest it at my own pace. But like with one of the courses, it didn't work for my learning style, at least, because it was very fast paced and we were just like going through chapters in one day. And that first time around the MCAT, I didn't do so well. So I spent all summer. This was summer 2017. So I spent all summer studying for that. And then going in, I had a goal to, because I wanted to apply in 2018. So I was like, okay, so I'm probably going to have to study for this during the normal academic quarter. And that was a struggle because still I was like doing research and taking my classes and whatnot. But, you know, I still thought I could do it. And it definitely backfired. It's not that I like did bad on my classes. It was just I had to devote more time with classes, research to where I didn't have enough really time to study for the MCAT. And so I scheduled the MCAT like the following January of 2018. But then when we got there, unfortunately, I didn't feel ready. So I pushed it back, and then I decided I'll just take it the following summer. Again, that summer came and I studied it at my own pace, no course and whatnot. I just read each book, took notes, and again, didn't do as well as I didn't progress as well as I wanted to. And I think that summer 2018 was one of the critical points to me thinking that I'm not sure if I could do this. Like, it was after like each week where I took a practice test and I didn't see my score improving, like it just crushed me. And summer 2018, my test was, I think, scheduled for September, and it was August. And I remember taking a practice test in August, and I just got so much anxiety because I was like, I need to do well on this and whatnot, that I actually didn't even finish that test. Like, I was, my mind wasn't there. And at that point, I would say it's definitely one of the lowest points of my like pre-med career, because I was just totally questioning my ability to do well on the tests. Luckily, I had great friends that reached out to me. If there's one thing I could like give people advice to, especially in undergrad or going through this journey, is to have like great community.
Collaboration, not competition.
Yeah, exactly, right. So I had great community along my side, and a lot of people there that wanted to see me improve and do well. So after reaching out to my friends and whatnot, and being able to like just reevaluate my mind, I set a goal to tackle it the following fall. So this is now we're going into fall 2018, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, I was also starting a master's program during that time too. It was my goal to apply. Apply in 2019. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to either study for this like before I have to go do my master's, or like after I'm done with the duties. And I decided to start waking up at 2 a.m. Because for me, at least in my learning style, I know that I'm not a very good night studier. Mm. Like, I don't like studying at night, like past like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. I don't know. I don't like studying when I'm like fatigued, because I don't like drinking coffee. I don't want to like push myself. So I'd rather wake up really early and study when I'm refreshed. Mm-hmm. And like at that time too, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., there's no like nothing bothering me. Like, no one's on social media. No one's posting a picture on Instagram. So I think it was after I developed that habit, like it was great. Like, I would wake up. Luckily, I had 24-hour access to this library on campus. So I just go to the library. It was just me, the custodians, and we were rocking it out.
you and the custodians, just chilling.
Yeah, just chilling, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and then I would study. And then at 8 a.m., I would go do my master's classes, do my research, because this was a research focused master's, but we had to also do some classes. And then at the
why were you taking a master's?
During community college, I did do research, but I didn't have like the experience of like contributing to a research project where I'm producing novel data. So I wanted that like true research experience where, like, you know, I have this hypothesis, I want to test it out. I want to generate data.
So taking a master's for that is a very expensive, proposition.
Yes, it is.
Did you think you had to do that to get into medical school, or did you truly want to do it?
Yeah, I truly wanted to do it. I truly wanted to that research experience, because one of the reasons that I wanted to be a physician was I wanted to like be like the trifecta. Like, I wanted to treat patients in the clinic. I wanted to teach at university and medical school, and I also want to do research. And like, being a physician is so multifaceted, you can do that. That was like one of the reasons I wanted to do it, and I wanted that research experience. But yeah, I agree, doing a master's is very expensive. But I think the thing was, it also helped with my GPA, because my GPA wasn't so, or I mean, it was like below average, but after doing the master's, it was above average. So it definitely helped with my GPA. That research experience, and also like after doing that, I was able to become published. So, I mean, there were benefits, but I agree, it's very, It doesn't have to be that expensive. Yeah.
So I'll pause you there and just a public service announcement for those listening. You do not need a master's degree to get research and be published to get into medical school. So this is not the normal route of what you have to do. So this is Kevin's journey. But okay. All right, cool. So the MCAT was a huge struggle for you. And you finally overcame and figured out your learning style, which includes getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, which is awesome. When it came to applying to medical school, what was the most surprising thing that you found during the application process that you weren't really prepared for?
I think one thing is, so I've heard this advice a lot from a lot of people, but I think I was just so like, I don't know, trying to like be pre-med that I kind of forget to like be myself or not be myself, but like be able to tell why I'm unique or why I'm different. So when it came down to like, for example, writing my personal statement, like I had like, I don't know, 25, 26 drafts because like the first like five or whatever, it was so generic. But from a lot of advice, like people would tell me to like share your experiences and how, what makes you unique. And what, after the process, I began to realize that like, wow, my story does matter. It does matter that I come from a family of refugees, because that's like, you know, that will have to do with how unique my educational journey takes place. And it does matter that I did competitive bodybuilding, because that's what led me to medicine. It does matter that, I don't know, I did wrestling because I learned the importance of resiliency. So a lot of these things that I thought didn't matter because it wasn't research, it wasn't volunteering in the hospital, it wasn't like MCAT or, mm-hmm. you know, GPA related, actually does matter.
So I'll caveat that, right? I'll caveat that 1000% it matters. I want students to put their hobbies and put their kind of other experiences outside of medicine on their application. But the mm-hmm. the one caveat I'll put on that is that I warn students not to try to sell too much, right? So when you mentioned that wrestling taught you resiliency, right? I don't want students on their application, whether it's in their personal statement, which it shouldn't be in your personal statement, but in your activity list, I don't want you to write, as a wrestler, I learned resiliency, right? Because then it's just a sales pitch.
No. Yeah. Like you have to show.
Exactly.
Not tell.
Exactly. So that's just one caveat I'll put on there so that student listening goes, oh, I know what to do to write about now.
Right, exactly. And actually, I did write about bodybuilding in my personal statement.
Yeah, you said it led to you wanting to be a physician or led to medicine. Yeah. So that's perfect.
So yeah, and like I did that purposely to like throw the reader off, because a lot of my friends, like don't. Or not necessarily like, it's just a different dichotomy, you know, like, you can think of like meathead gym rat and then, or meathead, bodybuilder and being a physician. And that was actually what, like all my interviews that I had, like, that's the first thing they brought up about me, like, oh, tell me about bodybuilding. Like,
yep.
But not
flex your muscles. Let me see
right,
him.
Exactly. Like, can you do right now? Yeah. So, like what you said, but at the same time, yeah. Show, not tell. I got that a lot from a lot of my friends that were applying, and
yep.
like a lot of advice that I had.
Perfect. That's awesome.
So yeah, more of the story. Like your story does matter.
Your story matters, definitely. I have a t-shirt that proves it. Says your story mm-hmm. matters on it.
Right.
So you've been successful this application cycle, two acceptances so far, both to DO schools. Talk about the kind of the difference that you've encountered applying. I'm assuming you applied to MD as well, but the difference that you've seen applying to MD schools and to DO schools, and why do you think you don't have any MD acceptances at this point?
So from the last time we spoke, I do have one.
All right.
Yeah. So I have six total.
Nice.
Six for six, actually.
That's so awesome.
one MD, five DO. I didn't apply. I applied to more DO than MD.
Okay.
And I think like the MD application is a lot more extensive than the DO application.
In terms of what? Because they're very, very similar.
Yeah, yeah. They're very similar in terms of like what you have to input, like the most meaningfuls.
Yep.
And whatnot for the MD versus just tell me about your experience.
Yep.
In the DO. Like I listed like all my experiences in the DO, but I was more careful and meticulous to the MD just because I didn't want to like show that I like did things just cause.
Yeah, and you only have 15, a maximum of 15 on the MD application versus the DO, right, which is like free for all.
And I think the DO application is a lot, it takes a lot longer. Okay. Like the DO applications, like all my DO acceptances, they want me to secure my seat by December 14th.
Yep.
So at like this Saturday, actually, and like the DOs that you have until all year. So, or sorry, the MDs you have until, I don't know, about June or whatnot to secure your acceptance. So I think a lot of DOs are more pushy
in
the sense that they want you to like secure your seat or they're going to give it to someone else.
Yeah, that non-refundable $1,000, $2,000 deposit.
Oh, that's the worst. Because some of my schools were like $2,000, some of my schools $3,000. I had a friend, he got accepted to DO program. They only gave him 3 weeks, 2 weeks to submit a $3,000 deposit.
Yeah, it's just ludicrous. Like, if I could just change one thing about the application cycle, it's the DO deposit. It's ludicrous, and it's taking advantage of students, unfortunately. And so it's something that I bring up all the time to the AOA.
Oh, really? Yeah, that'd be great, because a lot of students are just struggling. Like, we already spent however much on applications and then interviewing there. It just sucks that like they hit you with another like big fee.
Yeah. Okay. So lots of acceptances. Amazing job with that. Where do you think, what are you doing to evaluate the acceptances and figure out where you want to go?
I think the biggest thing for me is, wherever I go, I want to be able to stay true to who I am while becoming who I want to be. So for example,
that's a beautiful way of putting that, by the way.
Right. Thank you. And a lot of these places I'll look for, because I do a lot of jujitsu and mixed martial arts. Are there jujitsu dojos around that I can go to like after I go study or something like that? Are there gyms around
nice.
So that I can go work out? Are there research opportunities? Are there high schoolers? I really enjoy investing into like high schoolers and whatnot. I developed a mentorship program. Are there like resources for me to continue to fulfill my passions while also becoming the doctor that I want to be? Mm-hmm. So I look at that, and then I think, for me, at least, location is pretty big too. Like if you have options, then, location is big. For example, one of my first acceptances was, I'm in California, and it was all the way in the East Coast. And then like, I just got accepted into a California school. It'd be nice to like stay around family.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of students listening to this will go, that's baloney. You got into an MD school. You're going to go to the MD school over the DO schools. Is that a part of the equation?
No, not at all. Because from a lot of my shadowing experience, because I think shadowing and like your hospital experiences really shape who you are. And who you want to be as a physician and who you could be. For example, a couple months ago, my dad, he had really high blood pressure. So I rushed him take him to the emergency room, to urgent care. And like we were seen with this physician. And the whole time the physician was, while she was asking questions, she wasn't like looking at my dad or me. She was just typing on her notes and whatnot as she was asking us questions, and I could just like feel that sense of like that disconnect between like the physician and the student. or the physician and the patient. And that was at that point, I was like, wow, that's like something I would never do to my future patients, not look them in the eye or not try to connect with them and whatnot. So like just an example, but like, so a lot of my volunteer experience, a lot of my shadow experiences have shaped who I want to be and what I want to do as a physician. And I think a lot of my experiences, my positive experience with medicine has come from shadowing osteopathic physicians. And that's why I want to go towards osteopathic medicine and MDs. And as well as, I think I can, for example, continue to be who I want to be while becoming who I want to as well as an osteopathic physician, because the philosophy resonates more with me and, my background, and wanting to pursue like preventative medicine. And, cause I believe like, food is medicine, exercise is medicine. And as a osteopathic physician, I can advocate for that a lot better than studying under an allopathic school.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, at least, I'm leaning more towards a DO.
Okay. So for the student out there on their journey, maybe they're struggling with their MCATs like you did, trying to figure out what best works for them, or they're doubting their journey or figuring out if PT or medicine is right for them. What kind of final words of wisdom do you have for them?
So in terms of the MCAT, like especially if you're struggling with it, my biggest advice is fail early, fail forward if you have to. So like I would say like if medicine is what they want to do, like truly what they want to do, I assume they're not going to give up on their MCAT and not going to give up trying to improve their score. But if the score is not improving, I would advocate or like recommend just trying different learning styles, like making flashcards or listening to your videos because they helped a lot, or not necessarily doing what other people say, but sticking to their learning style and how they best learn. I think for people that questioning their decision to go into medicine, like I think the decision should never be forced. Like if you're, I don't know, I just heard this quote like when I was listening to this podcast during my drive here, and it says something like, if you have to like force yourself to think about it, or if you have to force yourself to want it, then you probably don't want it. So I think in the sense that, because I believe with my journey, I didn't choose medicine. Medicine chose me. Mm-hmm. I just continued to pursue what I liked. And I saw a career that I can continue to do that. So it shouldn't be, if they're deciding to choose medicine or not, it shouldn't be like such a hard decision. Not sure if I worded that wrong, but it shouldn't be like a decision where they're forcing themselves to make, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely does. That's awesome. Okay. So what's next? What's next for you? What are you hoping to accomplish when you get to medical school and finish medical school and for your life?
Yeah. So, right now I'm in my gap year. I just finished my master's program, so I'm completely done with anything academic until next fall, but I hope to compete in another bodybuilding competition. And compete in jiu-jitsu competitions as well. And then hopefully travel. And then as a physician, like I said, I really want to be an advocate for minority and at-risk groups. I not only want to treat people in the clinic and have that one-on-one impact, but also have the impact on at a population level. So I hope to pursue some type of MPH and be a physician that deals with policy, because I believe that there's a lot of people making decisions on people's health that don't have experience in healthcare or like caring for others, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So to have someone in these like high level positions, high level political decisions that actually understands, that actually has empathy and has that experience working with patients, being in the trenches, well, I want to be in that position as well to make these like very critical decisions on the health of communities.
All right. So there you have it. Again, that was Kevin sharing his journey from PT to leaving school because of family finances to starting over in a new state at a new school, but ultimately becoming successful, getting into medical school. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of motivation so that you can understand that no matter what happens in your journey, this is something that you can still accomplish. Hope you have a great week. Don't forget to subscribe because next week on Christmas, as it comes out, we have an amazing story for you. One of the best stories, one of the best people that I've talked to in my time as a podcaster. So stay tuned for that next week here on the Pre-Med Years podcast.
This is MedEd Media.